This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. If and or when you flip on television news today, you're likely to see a way more diverse set of people on screen than you used to. Same is true even on satirical news programs like The Daily Show, which if you've ever watched, and if you haven't, then why not? But if you have, they have fittingly satirical job descriptions for their reporters, the senior black correspondent, for instance, or in the case of this next interview, senior Muslim correspondent. Just how Asif Manvi got that job is a longer story that he tells in his new book, No Land's Man. Asif, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what, man, this book is by turns hysterical.
Thank you.
Don't get ahead of yourself because it's also parts of it. Parts of it are also.
But not only is
that. That's right. It's sad and hard to read, and it's parts of it are not a lot of fun because there's racism and there's all kinds of stuff in here.
Tough
book to write.
It was very cathartic to write, you know. It was, these are the themes I was attempting to explore, often through humor and sometimes not.
Yeah. The device, we should say, is I guess you could call it a journey home, right? You go back to Bradford, England, and we should give the biographical sketch here, right? Born in Bombay, then Bradford, and then Florida when you're 16, right?
Yeah.
Not to give it away, but you go back to find that theater that arguably launched you on your career as an actor, and it's not there, man. It's an open field.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I went back to the place. There's this little children's theater where I first discovered my bug and penchant and proclivity for performing and acting, and I went back after all these years, and the place had burnt down. The book, you know, is called No Land's Man, and I keep searching for a home and ultimately realize that the metaphor of the open field is really the home that I've been searching for, you know.
How much did that journey that you took in this book, or I guess the start of it, affect your choice of career and you finding work as an actor now, as an adult?
I never know whether the chicken or the egg came first. You know, as an immigrant, I think one of the things that always happens to you is you find out how to adapt to the new environment and to how to adapt to the predominant culture. And so that adaptation created a lot of versions of myself, you know. Some of them, you know, is a false self, but it is still something that I think allows you to then perform and be, and then, you know, the journey is also going back and trying to integrate that with an authentic self that you try to find in your life through therapy or this
or
craft
performance,
called
right?
acting
yeah.
or performing, yeah.
Well, so let's talk about that authentic self for a minute. You make your way to New York, you find yourself an agent, and you go out on your first national television commercial audition.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that story, because that's all racial identity and sense of self and the whole deal.
Right. I'd been in school and I'd been doing all this stuff, and then I came to New York and it was the professional world, and I went on this audition for some commercial and they wanted me to be a snake charmer. I went in and tried to do this Indian accent and this head wobble that they kept asking me to do. I had suppressed it so far inside of myself that I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do the Indian accent because the Indian accent to me was associative of my father and that immigrant sort of image that I didn't want to be. I couldn't do it, and I ended up doing this weird, bad, like, sort of, it sort of ended up sounding like a Russian or an effeminate Arab or something, you know. And of course the director was kind of like, that's great, terrific. And I suddenly was like, no, it's terrible. Why would you possibly think that was a good Indian accent? And why do you not care that it's not a good Indian accent, you know? And then of course, they said to me, do you actually know how to snake charm? But I didn't get the job. And they gave it to a very swarthy-looking white guy.
A white guy, right. And I mean, you see this ad later and you're like, come on, man.
Right. And, you know, and in the story I talk about the sort of internal conflict that I go through of, like, should I do this? More and more of those auditions came along, and eventually you have to pay the rent and you have to, like, feed yourself. And so you start doing that stuff and then kind of start to get immune to what it is. And that's finally me getting to writing my one-man show.
When you wrote that one-man show, and it took years and it was a workshop and you had, you know, acting lessons and all that stuff, you get it on and it does well, and the New York Times, you say, is very generous in its review. It's called Sakina's Restaurant, by the way, we should say, just to give it the plug. Was that the exorcising of the demon for you, or is it still around now?
You know, it's something that I think I will always deal with. And now it is my, you know, that constant question of what is it to be South Asian American, you know, what is it to be a South Asian American man? That question is constantly in my work and will continue to be, and actually becomes my source of power now, you know. But yeah, when I wrote Sakina's Restaurant, it was really about, I just wanted to write characters who were human beings and not cartoons from my ethnic background and from my experience. So it got me in touch with my own cultural identity in a way that I never imagined. I was writing it for non-South Asians. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was, as word got out about the play, people started coming, and Indians and Pakistanis and Muslims and Arabs and Greeks. And these people, especially the South Asian people, had never seen themselves reflected on stage before.
And then one day, The Daily Show calls, and mm-hmm. you said, in essence, sorry, I'm not in the mood, I'm busy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they called, and I remember my manager called, and the first thing they said was, The Daily Show is looking for a Middle Eastern type. And I thought, well, this is the most elaborate Homeland Security sting operation I've ever heard of. This is not going to go well. And I also had done this kind of thing before. I'd gone on Letterman and been like the voice of Saddam Hussein or Jimmy Kimmel and been a tech support guy. And so I thought it was going to be one of these things where I was going to end up like putting on a turban and sitting on a carpet and pretending to fly or something, you know. Yeah. So I said, no, I don't want to do it. They called back and they said they're actually looking for a correspondent. And I said, okay, fine, I'll go down there. And I really didn't know what I was doing. And you know, and I did what basically all the Daily Show correspondents do, which is I just did my best Stephen Colbert impression. you know, I went down there, I put on a suit and tie, I arched one eyebrow and got the job. And got the job not only in that moment I got the job.
Right.
And it was on, and I was on the show that night.
Does it bug you that many, many millions of people only know you as Asif Manvi, the guy on The Daily Show, as opposed to the guy who has done substantive theatrical work on a whole lot of difficult issues?
You know, it doesn't bug me. It's interesting when people realize, you know, when John hired me, he specifically wanted someone who was an actor and not a quote-unquote comedian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he got. And I don't think of myself as a comedian. I think of myself as an actor who does comedy. And even on The Daily Show, I feel like that person that I play is a character who happens to have my name. But he also has a team of very funny Ivy League educated Jewish comedy writers that go around with him wherever he goes.
It is a book called No Land's Man by Asif Manvi. You've seen him on The Daily Show and a bunch of other places. Asif, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.